It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host on WGN Radio 720 in Chicago. Thank you for joining me on the last day of March, which means that tomorrow is April Fool's. So I believe, like in many things in life, it's time to get a, it's always good to get a head start on things. So did you happen to see the headline this week? It was kind of obscure, but did you see the headline that the largest wind farm in the world is going to be placed starting up just north of Montrose Harbor? It's going to be about, 300 yards offshore, and it's going to run south almost all the way to 95th Street, staying about 300 yards offshore. It'll be a straight-line wind farm. It'll be the largest in the world, and construction's expected to begin on it this summer. Boating advocates are concerned that the construction will get in the way of sailboat races on Lake Michigan, and, of course, power boaters are concerned that there'll be a lot more traffic on the lake, and there'll be really heavy equipment on barges as they build the largest wind farm in the history of the world, beginning at Montrose and running down the 95th Street. And then, of course, part of that will require the establishment of transmission lines, which, due to the cost of burying them, they've decided that they will not bury the transmission lines, but they're going to run them over ground, and they're going to come right through the playpen, that area north of Lake Point Tower and south of Oak Street, and then they're going to run them up along Oak Street Beach, and then they're going to run them straight west down Burton, and they're going to connect them all the way west, running west across the interstate all the way till they hit the major transmission lines out at I-39. So this is a project that will cost tens of billions of dollars. The mayor of Chicago is so excited about the jobs it's going to bring to the city. And he did comment that due to the federal requirements that red blinking lights be on top of every windmill, and they're going to be something like, I think the number was somewhere between 2,700 and 6,000 windmills will be part of this project, that they're going to ask the FAA for a waiver on having red lights blinking on top of these windmills, because all the residents in Chicago on Lakeshore Drive and down to Millennium Park and all the way down would, of course, at night have to look at these red blinking lights. And the windmills are going to be really close together because of the way the wind blows, which means that these lights would be, well, it would just be a constant red blinking light and probably make people, you know, think like they were, well, be like Chinese water torture eventually. And it certainly would do nothing for the property values along Lakeshore Drive and all the way down through Millennium Park. So that has to be worked out, but it is a big announcement. And of course, it's never going to happen. So instead, Mr. and Mrs. Jones or Mr. and Mrs. Smith, sitting on their beautiful piece of farmland out in western Illinois with unobstructed views to the horizon, they're the ones that are going to have these windmills placed in their backyards, whether they like it or not. And they're the ones that are going to have the transmission lines running through their properties, whether they like it or not. And they're the ones who are going to have their property values devalued, whether they like it or not. So on April Fool's, tomorrow, obviously this isn't going to happen because the millions of people in Chicago and Mayor Johnson and the city council would never permit what not only the world's largest wind farm on Lake Michigan, right outside of Chicago. It'd be great for tax revenues. Can you imagine all the revenues the city would get from this and all the government subsidies that would come with it and all the jobs? It probably actually would be an economic windfall for Chicago from a wind farm. But it's not going to happen because nobody wants to look at a wind farm. We don't want to look at any more off of Oak Street Beach than people on Nantucket want to look at a wind farm, any more than Farmer Jones, Farmer Smith, or whomever living in rural America wants to look at a wind farm in their backyard. So taking this on a more serious note, what we have is this correct notion that many people decide where a wind farm is going to be as so long as it's not going to be in their backyard, if many people live in that backyard. But if nobody lives there or very few people live there, guess what? That's where the wind farm's going. All you have to do is drive down I-39 or drive west on I-80, and you can look at what has happened to the Illinois landscape at night. I guarantee you, most of the individuals living in rural America are not in favor of these giant wind farms. They're not in favor of any of them. I was in Alberta last fall and all over southern Alberta, and there are not many people who live in southern Alberta, but at every single farmhouse you saw, stop the wind farm. Well, it turns out the Canadian government has decided the Front Range of Alberta, with the winds coming off the top of the Rockies and cascading down with the big Chinook winds, is one of the great places to put wind farms. No, they're not going to put it in Calgary, which, by the way, is just as windy as southern Alberta. And they're not going to put it in Edmonton, which also has the same wind systems coming off the Rockies. No, they're going to put it where people don't live. And therein lies the problem. As I've said many times in the air, and I'm going to move off of this subject after the next moment here for quite a while, is there's no way for the small number of people who live in rural America to fight Washington, D.C. and the lobbyists and the subsidies that are deciding where these wind farms are going to go and where these transmission lines are going to go. And so what if it mars their viewscape? We're not going to mar the viewscape of anyone living on Lakeshore Drive because there are lots of us living there. But we're okay going 60 miles west and destroying the views of people who live in DeKalb County or live in Lee County or on down who live in around Hennepin with these huge wind farms. We're okay with doing that because there aren't many of them and their votes don't add up. Well, I think we got it wrong. I think that rural America is so fed up, and I hear this everywhere I go, and I spend a lot of time in rural America. Rural America is so fed up with these wind farms coming in that they are going to do everything they can to stop them. And no, they don't have the votes, but they're going to figure out ways, because there's no reason for their viewscapes and their quality of life to be destroyed so that those people who live in cities don't have to look at wind farms, or live in places where there are a lot of people, Nantucket in the summer, they don't have to look at wind farms. Something's wrong here, that we don't value the American landscape, and that's what we're doing to these wind farms. These things are going to be here for a long time. Whether they work or not work, or they're terrific for reducing climate change, that's not the point of my discussion this morning. My point of my discussion is, where do people get the right to decide we're going to destroy this place, which has, since the beginning of time, looked like it looked? Go to the Front Range of the Rockies and look at these wind farms in rural Wyoming and stuff. Look at this. There's never been anything built there, and all of a sudden, for miles away, you see red blinking lights at night, or during the day, you see these wind turbines. Where did we come up with a master plan that says these are the places we're going to put wind farms, and these are the places that we're going to destroy, at least for a long time, the natural beauty of the land? Of course, we didn't come up with that. We don't do things in that way of a strategic plan. So the next time you're driving across Illinois or you're flying over somewhere and you look down and you see these huge wind farms, ask yourself, is that the right place for that? Of course, the right place wasn't our own backyard, but we just decided to put it in somebody else's backyard. And agricultural America is the one who is having to face this with consequences that they never asked for. I'll be back in just a moment. When I do, I'm actually going to talk about something that's pretty interesting to me, and that is what the UN did this week. And since I'm talking about energy and April Fools, what I'm about to tell you is not an April Fools joke. It actually happened at the UN, but it will get your attention. And then I want to talk about dairies and bird flu. There's been an outbreak of bird flu in dairies, which is causing people to have some concern that maybe we have a new strain of bird flu. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the Great Outdoors Show. The rest of the show is not April Fool's. Thank you for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. I hope you enjoyed that beginning, at least tongue-in-cheek part of the show, but obviously the end before I took the break was not tongue-in-cheek. We really have a serious problem of no master plan when it comes to how we're going to be destroying the landscape of rural America when it comes to wind farms and, to a lesser extent, solar farms. Solar farms obviously are much lower to the ground, but they also have the same kind of impacts. But visually, wind farms can be seen for miles, and that was the purpose of why I'm talking about. Where's the master plan? Shouldn't we tell people in advance we're going to destroy this part of the country and ruin the landscape just so you know it's coming and let them have a voice in it? Be nice if we did that. But again, as I said, that's not how governments work. That's not how these subsidies work. Moving on, since I'm talking about energy, I'm going to quote from an article that it appeared in, of all places, on climate in the New York Times. And they say it didn't make many headlines, but last week at a meeting of the International Maritime Organization, which is part of the UN, something potentially world-changing happened. The United Nations agency, which regulates the shipping industry, essentially committed to creating the world's first carbon price. The proposal would require shipping companies to pay a fee for every ton of carbon they emit by burning fuel. In other words, it's a tax, and it could be one of the biggest taxes in the history of the world. That got my attention, and it should get all of your attention. The Great Outdoors Show is obviously about the outdoors. Ships, I guess we could stretch a little and say these huge container ships are part of the outdoor landscape, although certainly they're not anything you think about when you get on a pleasure boat. But think about that tragically, that large container ship that crashed into the bridge in Baltimore. That's the kind of ships we're talking about. So they have decided that the UN has decided that they're going to create a tax on carbon emitted by these ships. Now, there's a lot. The article goes on to say the UN has all kinds of logistics to work out, but they figure it will raise somewhere in excess of $10 billion a year in taxes for the Green Climate Fund, which is administered by the UN. That fund is meant to help developing countries tackle climate change. So they're talking, and I'm reading a quote here, we're talking about something that can really improve the landscape of climate finance. An economist said Dominic Eggert, an economist who researches green shipping at the World Bank. Then you go on to read this, and it turns out the World Bank will be running this climate fund, which the UN passes. And then they go on to discuss, and this is where I got my, aside from suddenly creating a tax, which none of us, I think, agreed to, it goes on to say that because underdeveloped countries would have to pay far higher costs for the goods that are transported around the world's oceans, and that this tax would hurt them disproportionately, that developed countries in the world should create a subsidy fund to then fund the the increased costs that the underdeveloped countries are going to have to pay, citizens in those countries are going to have to pay as a result of the carbon tax that is now going to be placed on all maritime, commercial maritime vessels that's going to raise billions and billions of dollars a year. That's what's coming. My comment would be, as I sit here and having just attended a conference with individuals who are fairly sophisticated in the subject of energy, it's highly likely that within the next 10 to 15 years, most of the world's very large container ships and commercial ships will be powered by some other form of energy other than that they are today. So maybe we should focus on accelerating that change to new forms of energy for these ships, as opposed to huge taxes on the commercial transport around the world. And again, they don't go into explain exactly how this is all going to work. But anytime the UN and the World Bank get together and decide that Americans should pay the price, you know we're going to pay the price. Anyway, that's my thought on what I read there. Dairies and bird flu. This is a serious issue. And we've obviously been talking about bird flu for a number of years as it's spread across the country. However, now the USDA has confirmed that cattle in Texas, dairy cattle primarily in Texas, Kansas, and possibly even New Mexico have contracted avian influenza. They stress that the nation's milk supply is safe. I actually met with a leader of the dairy industry, had lunch with him the other day and talked to him about this. And he said, there's no question the world's and America's milk supply is absolutely safe. What they're worried about is it's a new strain of bird flu. And what does that mean, again, for all the poultry farms, all the migratory birds, everything we've just gone through, all the game farms that provide birds for hunting across America, everything they've just gone through the last 2 to 3 years with bird flu, does it mean now we suddenly have a new strain of bird flu that birds are not going to be immune to? And are we going to continue to see the incredible loss of birds that we have with the first couple rounds of avian influenza bird flu, which actually, this is a subtype of the influenza known as H5N1, which was identified over 20 years ago, and that's been spreading around the world. So it's in dairy cows. The question is, how far does it spread in dairy cows? Does a dairy cow in Texas get transported to a place in Colorado or Illinois or Wisconsin, the second largest dairy state in the country? And does that dairy cow then have an ability to pass it on? Nobody knows. They think it's passed on from insects. There has been no indication yet that it's passed on from cow to cow. But bird flu is not going away, unfortunately. We've seen the tremendous impact that it's had on certain bird species. In the West, we saw with sage grouse, and that's one of the probably the primary reason sage grouse have plummeted so much is the effects of bird flu. So I'll be back with much more next week. When I come back next week, I'm going to talk about the state of Vermont, which is doing something rather bizarre when it comes to wildlife management. And also, I've got an interesting story about a grant from the USDA to subsidize marginal lands and put them into timberland, and we'll talk a bit about that. Thanks so much for listening, and happy April Fool's Day tomorrow to everybody. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.